Jids up. Feeling like a million bucks. Catching dubs with the fam. His hands a royal flush. That's Snotty Nose Res Kids. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. Will Wagner is up. And yeah, certainly feeling like a million bucks. Two more hits yesterday to become just the fifth Blue Jay to get five hits over the first two career games with the club. We went over the three-hit first-timers yesterday. The guys with five hits over the first two career games with the Blue Jays, Danny Ainge, Lloyd Mosby, Eric Hinsky, Davis Schneider, and now Will Wagner. That helped contribute to a 6-1 Blue Jays win. Vlad stays hot. He and Spencer Horwitz went back-to-back. It's only the second time all year that the Jays have gone back-to-back. Vlad and Justin Turner, I think, was the other one earlier in the season. Will Wagner has a two-run double in the first to kind of get things going after Ernie Clement drives one in off the third base bag. Joey Loperfido adds an RBI single for insurance in the eighth inning. And then on the other side, Kevin Gausman turns in seven shutout innings. Now, didn't look to me like he had his best stuff. Velocity was down about a mile and a half, 2 miles an hour on the fastball, on the splitter, and the slider. He didn't get a lot of swing and miss, but he threw seven shutout innings. The Angels came out very aggressive. Gausman seemed to take the approach of, well, I'm going to pitch the contact then. Here's a couple of these sinkers. Here's some fastballs low in the zone that you can roll over, things like that. Wasn't the 13 strikeout version of Kevin Gausman we've seen at times over the years, but it was fairly efficient. And it's not a very good Angels team. That's a good team to pitch the contact against. It's the first time that Gausman's gone 7+ in two starts in a row since May of last year. That's that coming via our pal Chris Black, who hopefully is resting up after doing a lot of work with that National Bank Open Tennis Tournament that was here and broadcast on Sportsnet. The other note from the game last night, George Springer absolutely blew his lid. He got hit in the foot with a pitch. They didn't call it a hit by a pitch. He's nice and calm. He's like, okay, challenge it. Like, obviously I got hit by a pitch. I'm not going to waste the team's challenge. He knows he got hit. And then they reviewed it and still said no hit by a pitch. And then he reacted. And then he really reacted with some choice language and things like that, saying after the game that, he doesn't want to do that. There's kids in the stands. And he doesn't want his sons to be mad at him. John Schneider got in on some of the language as well. Just a bizarre one. Like, I get that on some of the replays, you maybe can't tell for sure if it hits his foot or hits the dirt. But when a guy reacts like that, when he's initially hit, and I don't mean the like blowing up after, I mean, he reacts like he got hit by a pitch and then is so quick to be like, yeah, challenge it. Obviously I got hit. I don't know, man. Use the context clues. Didn't end up mattering, obviously, other than to Addison Barger, who, finally got into a game, the kind of forgotten man in all of this, which we'll talk about a little later in the show, maybe. A fun one for the Jays. They've got a chance to sweep the series tonight. And hey, they're back within single digits of the wild card now as well. 9 back. It'll be Jose Barrios against Tyler Anderson tonight. Another 9:38 start. And then something to keep on your radar. So they're off tomorrow. They've got this series in Chicago. Every game's a 220 game. That's nice. That is the start of 18 games in 17 days. And that takes them up to September 1st. So you don't get the expanded roster until the end of this stretch. It's going to make for some interesting decisions. Obviously, on the doubleheader day against the Red Sox, you get a 27th body. Maybe that's Jake Bloss to start one of those. Maybe it's Paolo Espino. But you got a pretty dense schedule here, both for your bullpen and for a starting rotation that has three guys that have been pretty heavily worked over the last couple of years, which, again, we'll talk about throughout the show. We've got Ben Nicholson-Smith joining us a little later. Wayne Randazzo, Kyle Glazer, and Dan Schulman will join us momentarily here. Programming note within all that, if you are looking for the Austin Matthews press conference today, Austin Matthews is being named the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll be picking that up live around 10:58. Jays Talk Plus is going until 12 o'clock as usual on Sportsnet Plus, Sportsnet 360. And at 11 o'clock, we'll switch over to the alt feed on the website. But Fan 590, if you're listening on terrestrial radio, will be J.D. Bunkus and that Austin Matthews press conference. So if you're looking for that, we will switch over. Speaking of switching over, our next guest making his way back to baseball after a couple weeks in France for the Olympics. It's Dan Schulman, voice of the Blue Jays on Sportsnet, voice of Canada basketball and Olympic basketball in general. Dan, how we doing, man?
We're getting there. I'd say I'm about 70% back on North American time, so that's good. Got a couple of more days to get right, but it was a great experience. I hope that came across on the air. You know, we had so much fun doing the games. Obviously, wish both the Canadian men and women had done a little bit better, but it was really, really cool, and I'm just as excited to get to Wrigley Field and get back on the baseball beat again.
Yeah, and you get it's a pretty nice landing spot. It's Wrigley, and then you and Boog are tight too, right?
Yes, we are very, very close friends. So he's kind of like Uncle Boog in our family. So actually my wife and my little five-year-old are coming to Chicago, which is great because it would have been really hard to, you know, be away 18 days, land, spend like 3 days at home and then leave again. So Lord and Hudson are coming with. And Friday, for those who don't know, is actually an Apple game.
Yep.
So it's one of those. So it wasn't at the time that we booked this. So Boog and I both were given a day off that we didn't even know we had coming on Friday. So we've got some fun five-year-old boy stuff planned for little Hud and Uncle Boog on Friday. So
perfect. That'd be a blast. I did want to talk to you a little bit more about the Olympics before we get into some of the baseball stuff. Look, I know this is something that, and I'm not the first person to talk about this with you. Gregor Chisholm did a great piece about it for the Toronto Star heading into the Olympics. But this is something for a long time in your career you've wanted, and you've earmarked in contracts and things like that, hey, if there's a chance to get the call of the Olympic basketball, you got to let me go. I want to do it. You got to do it. I know you had done it for the women's, but it was remote, and now you got to do it for the men's, and you got to be there. Have you had time yet to kind of reflect? This is something that you've been excited to do for a long time, and you've gotten to check it off the list now.
I have, and you know what makes me know that I really enjoyed it is as I was sitting on the plane getting ready to leave De Gaulle Airport in Paris, I Googled Los Angeles 2028 Olympic dates. So that tells me, oh, I guess I had a good time. So, yeah, and I don't want to make it about me. It was Gregor came up to me and said, hey, can I write this story? It's interesting to me. And I said, sure. So, yeah, I had it in my contract with ESPN forever. And then when I stopped doing baseball for them, I asked Sportsnet. I said, hey, this is like a bucket list thing for me. Can we put this clause in that if somebody asks me to do it, you'll let me do it? And I want to thank, you know, our bosses at Sportsnet for saying yes. But it was really fun. You know, sometimes you take for granted who's coming out on the floor, or you go to the Team Canada practice and you just see them together. And again, they didn't wind up finishing where they wanted to finish, even though they started very well, winning all three games. But I still think, you know, if we're talking about the men, things are trending in a positive direction. Momentum is building. It's not a straight line to where they want to go. They hit a big speed bump in the quarterfinals. But and I hope the women can do better in the next cycle as well than they did here. But it was really cool. I'd never been to France before. I'd never covered a Summer Olympics in person before. You know, part of a great crew too, with Megan McPeak and Nabil Kareem and others behind the scenes. So it was a really great experience.
Well, I'm very glad you got to do that. If CBC's listening, hey, freestyle wrestling and boxing 2028, you know where to find me. I'm not going to get to do the basketball, and who knows if there will be an MLB presence on the baseball side, but you know where to find me for freestyle wrestling and boxing. Okay, so Dan, from a craft perspective, obviously the schedule that you and Megan and Nabil did was a heavy one. You guys were doing like two games a day. How did you find it from like a broadcast? But like, I know the Canada disappointment was real, and we both felt it, you know, texting throughout and things like that. But then you got just two absolute bangers for gold medal games. The U.S. men's semifinal game was incredible as well. How did you feel about, you know, the overall body of work that you got to do?
It was fun. It was great. As you said, it was a lot of games, and I know, you know, nobody with the possible exception of you saw every single game because they could have been on CBC, on TSN, on Sportsnet, or just streaming on CBC Gem. So, but it's funny, you know, there have been, just a quick aside, there have been so many people I've heard from who I've known my whole life, who I never hear from about the Blue Jays, but some people are just Olympic junkies, right? And they'll watch badminton and table tennis and basketball and whatever, because it's the Olympics. And I heard from a lot of people who I was like, man, I didn't even know you knew what I did for a living, you know, but they're watching the Olympics. But It was, as you said, it was mostly two games a day. We did 26 games, probably split evenly between the men and the women. And if you take the, you know, the Canada bias out of it that we as Canadians have, the United States versus France was kind of the storybook matchup in both, right? Because it was in France. And, you know, I think we saw with the U.S. men, there was the South Sudan exhibition game and the Germany exhibition game. And then I'll be honest with you, in the second quarter of the Serbia game in the semis, I didn't think they were coming back. I thought it was over because Serbia is so, and I know you know this, they're so, so good. Like they're just, they have so many great players. And is Alexa Avramovic or Anjan Dobric, are they household names in Canada? Of course not. But there are so many good players playing around the world, and Serbia's got a lot of them. So, you know, you had that drama in the semis, and then the men get to the finals, and for 39 minutes, it's a game, really, right? And you know, everybody who watches FIBA was like, you know, Evan Fournier could go off at any time and just end this baby. Like, that could happen. And then Steph Curry said, not so fast. So, and then on the women's side, you know, to have it be a one-point game, a one-possession game.
Oh, poor Gabby.
Oh, my God. And Gabby Williams, who's another fantastic player. Like, not a good player, a fantastic player. To have her have one foot on the line when she hit that long shot right at the end of regulation. I don't know how well it came across on TV. Like, I literally have not seen 1 second of our TV coverage. And sometimes you can't tell when you're in the building. And our headsets were, like, industrial grade. Like, they were big, big headsets. And so sometimes you don't know exactly if you're feeling what they're feeling or, you know, people at home. But the building was great. And the, you know, the songs they had, the anthem, the chanting during the games and stuff. So it was really cool. And I think what we continue to see on the broadest of all perspectives is every single cycle, if you will, every single four-year cycle, the rest of the world gets better and better and better. And on the men's side and on the women's side. And it's not just narrowing the gap on the U.S. It's that any one of, like, seven different men's teams could have won the silver. Any one of, like, seven different women's teams could have won the silver. And you know, in 4, 8, 12 years, they're going to continue to narrow the gap. And the United States is going to have to make more and more sure they've got the right 12 players and they get them together and all that, or, you know, they're going to start losing. Again, that Serbia game, you know, they got saved. One terrible possession. They hit Somebody hit a three on the wing, and Jokic committed a foul away from the ball.
Yeah, the six-point play.
Right, a six-point possession. And that made it from whatever it was, 9-3 or 11 down to 5, whatever it was. And that's when the U.S. got back in the game. They also thought they got a bad whistle, just like Canadians feel they got a bad whistle against France. So, but FIBA going to FIBA, right? So, but it was really cool. And that's a big part of the fun for me. I love seeing the different styles that the teams play. And I love learning about a Dobric, a Yabusele, if I'm allowed to say that. I know that's painful for Canadian fans, but you know what I mean. There are great players everywhere, and every team plays a different style. It's not one style fits all, like sometimes can be the case in the NBA. So both on the men's and the women's side, it was really great.
I'm generalizing here, so I don't speak for everyone, but my read from Twitter, at least, is that Yabusele, you're allowed to say people are excited about him. He's such a fun player, and he put it on the U.S. as well. Cordinier is the name you don't want to be speaking well of here. Okay, Dan. So now you transition back to the Blue Jays, and I know how much you prep for baseball and for basketball and things like that. What is the transition back to baseball like for you now, and how much were you able to? You know, I mean, a third of the roster is different now than when you left. How much were you able to keep up?
So I tried to devote, let's say, half an hour a day to what was going on over there. The time zone is obviously weird, right? So I didn't watch a lot live, but I would watch like the little 4-minute highlight pack or the condensed game or something like that. I was gone over the trade deadline and, you know, again, tried to keep up. But often, because of the time change, I woke up to the news. You know, I would turn on my phone and say, oh, Kiermaier's gone, or oh, Jansen's gone, or whatever the case may be. So, you know, pretty caught up on that. You know, have spent some time trying to get to know the background stories of a Loperfido, of a Wagner, and boy, oh boy, Will Wagner in 2 days. But So I'm getting there again. The fact that we don't have to, that we're not doing the Friday game. My first game is not until Saturday. So I've got nothing to, you know, to gripe about. I landed here Monday night, my first game Saturday. So actually this morning I did my Cubs work because I can't claim to have spent any time following the Chicago Cubs while I was away. So I started my Cubs work, and I'll get more in before we hop on the plane tomorrow. But I think for the Blue Jays, listen, it's not where they want to be, obviously, but the best thing that could happen is this is a 2-month audition for these youngish guys to see who's a part of it for next year, whether it's Wagner, Loperfido, Barger, who hasn't, you know, who's fighting for playing time a little bit right now, Leo Jimenez, on and on and on, right? So this is what you want to see, and I would guess very strongly that the fans at least are a little bit energized by the turnover and seeing new faces. You know, there's more energy generally in younger teams than older teams. And this is, it's not that these guys are 21, but a lot of them are new to the major leagues, and there's an energy there. You know, there's an innocence there, if you will, to a lot of these guys. And I think we've seen some good signs, not all good stuff, but that's all you hope for is, you know, play hard, try your best, and let's see who's still going to be on the roster in 2025.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's fun. It makes for, you know, it's, you hope it's an iron sharpens iron thing where these guys are all competing with each other for spots for next year, and that makes them all a little better or whatever. And I think, too, you know, obviously everyone would rather these games matter a lot and the Jays be in a playoff race, but there is, like, day-to-day, inning-to-inning, like, the release of, there's not that much tension on the outcome, I think makes it a little easier to appreciate, hey, here's a good Will Wagner story. Hey, here's a good Bowden Francis start. Yariel makes a good start, but the team loses. Like, you can kind of let the outcome roll off a little bit as long as the prospects are moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I saw somebody tweeted this, I don't know who, like 10 days ago, and they made a good point. It's not that the wins and losses don't matter at all. It's just enjoy, like, if they do win a game and the young guys play well, it's okay to enjoy that particular game for what it is, what it was. If it makes them, you know, 5 games under instead of 7 games under, that's not the most important thing. But if it's a good game and a fun game, it's okay. They're fans. It's okay to enjoy this. And I think that applies for all of us. And like, I know last night, again, still trying to fight my way back time zone wise, and the game starting at 9:38, I knew I didn't have the whole game in me. But I watched the first inning, a very good inning, obviously, and Will Wagner doubled. And I said, you know what, and maybe this is weird, I said, you know what, I'm going to try to stay awake for Will Wagner's second at bat. Like, who would have ever thought that a couple of weeks ago that would be a thought process for somebody around this team? You know, so I got to see the Vladdy homer, got to see Wagner's second at bat. So I'm interested in Horwitz at bats, in Wagner at bats. Obviously, Loperfido has not gotten off to a great start. I was long gone. I was dreaming by the time he had his base hit later in the game. But he's important. Like, they clearly are saying to him, if you produce, there is a spot available for you on this team. Like, he's you know, one of the most important guys that they've acquired. So they have strengthened the system, and they have given themselves more, you know, players who are right on the cusp of becoming big leaguers if they produce, and that's what you want. And there are probably a couple more at AAA, right? If Class A comes up, if Roden comes up. This is one of the years we're on, and I don't know if some fans know this, but, you know, in the old days, you could expand the roster to 40 in September, right? Now it's 2 from 26 to 28, which probably means one pitcher and one position player, and that's it. So this is one of the years where, because of the situation they're in, they wish, you wish, we wish that they, you know, would have a couple more spots to take a look at. But at least there appears to be some reasonably healthy competition for playing time. And again, hopefully a few guys step to the front of the line and show that they're ready to be a part of it next year.
Yeah, B, that's the hope. And yeah, I think maybe there's a middle ground between you get 2 extra bodies and you get a 40-man roster. Like I don't know that we need everyone hitting against AA guys and all the September results being stuff you have to kind of throw out. And, you know, Brian Haroleman getting called up and spending a month on the roster and never playing and things like that. But it would be nice to get a look at more than one guy. And, like, in the Jays' case, you know, it's to me, it looks like the pitching spot is like they probably go to a six man because they have all these veteran guys with big innings loads over the last couple of years. So maybe you get a Jake Bloss look, but that's about it. Dan, on the since you watched a couple of innings last night, fun for you to get to hear Buck slide into the back into the play-by-play role. Obviously, sure. Buck has done play-by-play in the past, but he plays color off of you. Fun for you to hear him in the A1 role.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it is great that, you know, he can do both jobs, right? So, and it's been, I'm trying to think when the last time it was. It was either 21 or 22. I can't remember. But yeah, he sounds like he's having a great time. And Caleb sounds like he's having a great time. And I think we're in a really good spot. Like, if you look at us as a roster, I think we've got pretty deep depth, right? So, you know, whether it's me or Ben or Buck on play-by-play, and whether it's Buck or Joe or Caleb on color, that's it's nice that we can mix and match. Ben's been under the weather the last few days, as I know you know, so he is supposed to be back on Friday on radio when the Jays are in Chicago. So, but I guess we're a little bit kind of like the Blue Jays roster. We got guys who can play multiple positions. You can move us around a little bit. So, but yeah, it was great hearing Buck. I know he's having a lot of fun doing it. And it's funny, between the Olympics and then he kind of took like his longer vacation time or his longer off time right after the All-Star break. We were sitting there, I don't know where it was, but it was early July. And I was looking at our little Google Doc schedule, and I said, hey, we're not going to see each other till like August the 17th or 17th. Like, we haven't seen each other in 6 weeks because one or the other of us has been off all the time. So that's a little bit unusual. But yeah, he sounded like he's having a great time. He sounded great, and looking forward to seeing him this weekend.
Yeah, it is the way you lay it out. We do have a deep and flexible roster. That's why on the radio side, I got optioned to AAA for this season. I want to ask you, I don't think I've ever asked you this. I've talked to Buck about it in general, and I'll mention it because the Jays Care Foundation auction is coming up in a couple weeks here, and it's one of the things that you can win. Have you ever gone fishing with Buck on one of his trips down south?
I went fishing with Buck 1,000 years ago when my older boys were very young. I've got two older sons than Ben. So Ben wasn't even there. And my older boys were maybe 8 and 6 or something. Like, this is in 1990s TSN days.
Okay.
And he and a buddy of his, whose name I don't remember because it was 25 years ago, like, we just went out for a couple of hours because we're not fishermen. You know, we're like, hey, you want to go fishing? And my boys were like, yeah. And we went out for a couple of hours, and I've still got the pictures of my sons, young sons, with fish. I mean, Buck is, and no one could know less about anything than me about fishing. But you know, like, Buck is like a big time fisherman, and that trip that he auctioned off for last year, I guess it was, for Jay's Care, raised a ton of money, because I'm sure the people knew he was going to show them a heck of a good time, and I'm sure he did. So I've only been out with him once for a couple of hours. Like, my fishing experience is like off a dock in Muskoka somewhere and catching something the size of my thumb, you know, that sort of thing. That's as far as my expertise goes.
Yeah, mine goes about as far as, you know, sticking a pole in the Grand River between Cambridge and Brantford and being told, don't touch that. Don't touch the fish that are in there. Dan, thanks for sharing that, man. Thanks for taking the time out. Looking forward to hearing you back on the call Saturday.
All right. Appreciate it, Blake. See you soon.
Dan Schulman, voice of the Blue Jays on Sportsnet, back with us starting Saturday from a really terrific stint calling the Olympic basketball men's and women's alongside our pal Megan McPeak and Nabil Kareem. Just an unbelievable broadcast crew there. And just, yeah, really, it's so fortunate that, you know, we in Canada get to see all of that stuff free of charge over CBC Gem, or obviously if you have cable, CBC and TSN and Sportsnet, sharing the broadcast and stuff like that. It's cool. It was a really cool week to kind of immerse yourself in all of that and get to enjoy it all. And yeah, the fact that I could just fire up CBC Gem and watch the freestyle wrestling, because the Canadians did not do particularly well in it, so they weren't going to put that stuff on CBC. The Will Wagner start, by the way, it's the way Dan described that, like, oh, I'm going to stay up for one more plate appearance. It reminded me of Brett Laurie's debut in August 2011. I remember I was at like a big barbecue thing. I was meeting someone I was dating's parents for the first time. And like 2011-ish, you're not like I don't have MLB Game Day on my phone. I don't have Rogers Ignite on my phone, trying to sneak peeks and sneak looks at what was happening during Brett Laurie's debut. And he did not have a Will Wagner level of hot start, but he did have 15 hits over his first 11 games, including three homers and seven extra base hits total. So that's a pretty good high watermark for more recent debut runs for a midseason Blue Jay as well. And then obviously, you know, mentioned the stat there, the first Jay with five hits in his first two career games alongside Davis Schneider, Eric Hinsky, Lloyd Mosby, Danny Ainge. Eric Hinsky went on to win Rookie of the Year. Of course, I still have a broken Toronto star Eric Hinsky Rookie of the Year bobblehead somewhere. I believe in storage I have an Eric Hinsky jersey somewhere. Any jersey I had before is often stored somewhere, but I should find the Hinsky one and hang it up in here. Obviously, Davis Schneider, the most recent of those. We'll see. By the way, the other thing I want to say, and I didn't want to bog Dan down with it, but in terms of the outcomes mattering and not mattering and things like that, I got my first Why Aren't the Jays Tanking last night. So let's just take them, because the Jays did pass the Texas Rangers in the standings last night. So the Jays, you know, spot in the lottery odds would have gone from fifth to sixth. So two reminders here. One is that the White Sox and A's can't pick in the top nine because of the rules around picking that high multiple times and luxury tax payouts and things like that. So the Jays, even though they are eighth to last in record, are sixth in the lottery odds. It's very, very tight between Washington at fourth and Detroit at eighth. There are only two and a half games separating five teams there. So it is very tight. It is, you know, it's not nothing. The difference between 11% odds at the number one pick and 3% odds at the number one pick are real. In baseball, I would warn it matters, certainly, but you're not, you know, you're in the, unless it's the case of Paul Skeens, you're looking at a guy who's going to make an impact a couple years from now. Yes, there are bonus pool implications and things like that. I don't think we need to get quite as bogged down with it as we do in basketball and football. Second thing I will say, and this is the more important reminder, players don't tank. The front office traded away eight veteran players off the roster. The roster got, on paper, worse. That's what tanking looks like. That's what pulling the chute on the season looks like. John Schneider is not going to go out there and manage poorly intentionally to try to blow a game, to help the lottery odds for a prospect who will have a small percentage chance of making the majors at a time when, who knows, is John Schneider even here? Will Wagner is not coming up and when he has the chance to fight for a 2025 roster spot, being like, I'm going to hold back. We want the better draft pick. I know everyone knows this, but it is worth a reminder. Like, the front office has done the move to make the team worse for the rest of this year with an eye toward the future. From here, we're not talking about tanking, because what are they going to do? They're not, like, you got 26 players on the roster who are playing for their next contract or a job in the majors or guys who are managing and coaching for their jobs and things like that. Yeah, you're just the work on that is done, and then the outcomes are what they are from here. Like, maybe in September we'll talk about, hey, do you shut a Berríos, a Gausman, a Bassett down a little early? You don't want to shut them down too early, because you don't want them to go from like throwing 120 innings and then next year ask them to throw like 180 or something like that. But yeah, in September, you know, do you go to a 6-man rotation? Do you skip the odd start for them? I mean, Bassett's at 134, Gausman's at 139, Berríos is at 142. I think at a minimum, you probably want those guys up around 150, maybe even 160. That way, if you ask them for 175, 180 next year, you know, their body's ready for it. They're in the mix for that. So anyway, that is what tanking looks like in baseball, realistically, has happened. You know, it's not like basketball where only seven or eight guys are on the floor. And if you really thin out the roster, you can really help your ability to lose games. The Chicago White Sox are going to end up winning, you know, probably 40 games this year, even though they have one of the worst rosters ever assembled. That's the way it goes. The tanking stuff happens at the front office level, not at the player level. Let's take a break. Let's go to the West Coast. Let's talk to Kyle Glazer about, hey, he's covering this series from a Jays perspective. He's also covered the Angels, Dodgers, and Padres at times this year. Let's whip around the West Coast with Kyle Glazer as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jays win last night 6-1. Our pal Keegan Matheson off this series, working on the book. I believe it's pretty close to the finish line, so congratulations to him. Bad day to be a Guinness in his fridge. Because Keegan's off, our pal Kyle Glazer's been covering this series for BlueJays.com. Kyle's all over the place, man. He's doing Angel stuff, Dodger stuff, Padres stuff, Blue Jays stuff. Kyle, what can't you do?
Let's see, I can't argue a case in front of the Supreme Court. I can't program a computer, but writing about baseball is something I can do.
How are you enjoying the experience swooping in on the Jays for a couple days? Your fun couple days after a season of not a lot of fun days for this team.
Yeah, definitely. I've covered the Blue Jays a few times. I covered them earlier this year when they came down to San Diego, and I covered a lot of these guys when they were in the minor leagues as well during my time at Baseball America. So have a lot of familiarity with these guys. I think what's been really cool to see is just the injection of youth that Will Wagner has had on this team. Obviously made his major league debut 2 days ago, had a hit in his first three ABs, and then, of course, yesterday comes up and hits another, you know, two-run double in his first AB. He's someone who could always hit. There were just some questions about what's going to happen defensively, but he's made some nice plays at second base these last couple of days. And I think it's just always fun when you see a kid come up, have an immediate impact, and the Jays are talking about it. He's provided an injection of energy that's been a positive force for this team.
Yeah, it's been a ton of fun, you know, especially, you know, these games are on pretty late here. And we were just talking to Dan Schulman. He's like, yeah, I'll stay up for one more Will Wagner plate appearance. Why not? Obviously, the Billy Wagner joined our broadcast last night for an inning as well, which was really cool. And actually, in prepping, like when the Jays traded for Will Wagner, one of the things that I read in prepping and catching up on him was something you wrote for Baseball America out of the 2022 Arizona Fall League about a swing change he had made. Did you get a chance to talk to him over the last 2 days? And whether that's a yes or no, what have you seen, you know, now with him as a prospect versus those changes he was trying to make in 2022?
Yeah, I've talked to him a bunch. I had a big story on him for MLB.com after game one. Yeah, you know, I talked to him about that. And more than the individual change, what he's talked about is how that breakout in the 2022 Arizona Fall League really gave him the confidence that he could compete against the best of the best. Again, the Arizona Fall League is where the best prospects in baseball go. And Will Wagner that year was someone who was interesting. He had gotten up to Double A. He'd hit well. But look, this was an 18th round senior sign out of Liberty. Despite his bloodlines, he was not considered a big draft prospect, not considered a big organizational prospect. But when he went out there and showed he could, you know, stare down and do damage against some of the best minor league pitching in the game and really hold his own surrounded by some of the best minor league position players in the game, it really put him on everyone's radar. I remember choosing to feature him because I'm watching him all week. I'm like, this guy can really, really, really hit. So the changes he made there, the success he had, gave him the confidence and really sent him on this trajectory to the big leagues.
Oop, turn my mic on. It's pretty fun to see. And it's interesting, like, you know, someone asked me yesterday is like, oh, is he a big prospect? I'm like, not really. Like, he got traded at 26. He was an 18th round pick out of a small college. He's just one of those guys that, like, at every level he's hit. And it's like, okay, well, he's not going to hit at the next level. He's not going to hit the next level. And then he just keeps doing it. Where are you at in terms of, you know, what the future could look like for Will Wagner? Because again, you know, AAA performance is great, but if you're 25, 26, you know, that's the expectation. Could you see him developing into an everyday regular? I know the book on him from some places has been, yeah, he could be like a luxury bench piece, that kind of thing. Where could you see, you know, the future going for Will Wagner?
He can hit. And if you can hit, you will get everyday bats in the major leagues. I firmly believe that he has a very good chance to be an everyday player in the big leagues just because the bat is so strong. Again, finding a defensive position has been sort of the question at times for him, but he's actually shown pretty well at second base for these first 2 days. Again, as he gets more experience, pitchers are going to adjust. He's going to have to adjust back, you know, once they kind of find his holes a little bit. But look, it's a good, balanced, powerful left-handed swing. He doesn't hit a lot of home runs, but it's a ton of line drives, and that's a good thing. That's a great place to start. I think there's definitely a chance here that he becomes an everyday player just because the bat's so strong. A lot of times in the prospect world, people, you know, go crazy over the long, lean, loose athlete who, you know, can run and throw and do all these crazy things on the field, but they can't always hit. At the end of the day, if you can hit, you'll be a big leaguer, and Will Wagner can absolutely hit.
Well, that's a pretty good transition to the other guy they got in the Houston trade who is not off to a great start, Joey Loperfido. He did break an 0 for, I think, 24 drought last night with an RBI single late. Yeah. What have you seen with Loperfido? I know, you know, I didn't find a Loperfido Arizona Fall League piece from you in doing my prep, but I'd imagine if you were in on the Astros system, and obviously, you know, you've been at these two games. What do you see with Loperfido, a similar age guy, but obviously a very different prospect profile than Wagner?
Yeah, you know, he's a guy who's more like that great athlete type. You know, we saw some of that outfield athleticism with Houston before getting traded over to Toronto. I think the thing with him that's just been a little bit concerning is he's just swinging, missing so much. There's been times where he's had good at-bats, but then he gets pitches in the zone to hit and he just swings right through them. And a lot of times we see young guys come up and struggle and that happen. I think it was certainly good to see him get that RBI single in the eighth inning last night. You know, John Schneider talked about it. He could just take a deep breath, especially for a young player. Once those 0 for start piling up, you know, 0 for 10 becomes 0 for 15, becomes 0 for 20, it can, you know, speed up on you real fast and you start tensing up, and that just makes everything worse and worse. So we'll see if just that knock last night, he's able to relax a little bit. Again, there's plenty of athleticism there. He's shown the ability to hit in the minors. I think at the end of the day, you are looking at a guy who's more that, you know, just good athlete, can play the outfield, you know, left-handed hitting outfielder. We'll see what kind of bat he has ultimately. But it wouldn't shock me if he becomes kind of what he's been for the Blue Jays, a bottom of the order, you know, everyday outfielder. He's just in a little bit of a tough spot right now, but we'll see if he can snap out of it.
Yeah, we'll see. He's going to get lots of opportunity. He's been getting it pretty regularly. Seems at least the Jays are a little more committed to getting him and Will Wagner opportunity versus, say, an Addison Barger, who only got to come in last night because George Springer got tossed after absolutely losing his mind. I know you wrote about it for BlueJays.com, a quicker one there. Did you make of that? What did Springer have to say about it after the fact?
Yeah, I think what was shocking was it was clear to everyone he got hit in the back of the foot. You know, we saw it in the press box. Springer, obviously, his reaction. And if you watch Logan O'Hoppe's reaction and Kenny Rosenberg's reaction, they know it too. What Springer said afterward was the umpire told him that the way O'Hoppe had slid to block the ball, he was kind of boxed out, so he didn't see it. And he admitted that to Springer openly. They said, hey, we're going to look at the replay. We'll get it figured out there. And Springer and everyone else thought, okay, they'll do that. And pretty clearly, he will be awarded first base. The replay review officials were not able to determine conclusively the ball hit him, which was, again, kind of shocking. Springer obviously was not happy. He was walking away. That's when he got tossed. The rule is you cannot argue a replay review. That's why he got tossed. And he talked about it after the game. You know, he knows the rule, but just in the moment, the frustrations of he had very clearly gotten hit in the back foot. And then for the replay review to not reveal that he did, he wasn't happy about that. He got tossed. And then once that happened, he was pretty upset. He said Manny Gonzalez didn't say anything to him to set him off. It just, you know, series of events there. He just was not happy. And afterward, he was pretty apologetic about, you know, in his words, how much he kind of lost it. His exact quote was, you know, I got to be better. There are kids in the stands. I don't want my sons to see me that mad. So just a heat in the moment frustration. But yeah, it was very clear he got hit in the back foot. And it was just unfortunate that, you know, replay wasn't able to see that, because even watching the video, we felt like we could all see it. So we're not really sure what they were looking at in New York, to be frank.
Yeah, it was a bit of an odd one. And, you know, obviously I'm sitting at home here thousands of miles away, but it was a little confusing. Anyway, pivoting off of the Springer one there, the Angels side of this series, I know that's a team you've gotten a couple looks at this year. The Carson Fulmer smoke and mirrors sub 4 ERA. We done with that now after like 9 pieces of really hard contact yesterday?
Yeah, Carson Fulmer is not a starter in the major leagues. You know, the Angels just don't have any organizational depth. That's particularly true on the mound. So as soon as you started seeing some injuries, you know, once Patrick Sandoval got hurt, once Reed Detmers was struggling so badly, he had to be optioned back to the minors. You know, they pulled up Jack Kohanowitz, who, you know, he was a nice young right-hander, but he was nowhere near ready for the major leagues and long-term, if you like, and he's probably a reliever. Look, Carson Fulmer is a journeyman who had spent most of his career in the minor leagues. you know, realistically, he's probably a back end bullpen piece on a second division team, but the Angels are just so desperate, and their organization has such a shortage of major league caliber arms. This is very much a, hey, we need someone to take the ball. Let's see if you can do it. He lasted three innings, you know, a lot of hard contact. I've seen Carson Fulmer dating back to when he was in AAA in the White Sox system in 2016. And this is kind of who Carson Fulmer is, some wildness, a lot of effort, going to get hit hard. It's just kind of where the Angels are right now. I don't think anyone should confuse him for a major league caliber starter.
Yeah, I got in setting up the game on the show yesterday, I got a text after. It's like, man, you really don't like this Carson Fulmer guy. I'm like, it's nothing personal. I just kind of didn't believe that he was a sub-4 ERA guy. And it's always interesting when the shoe drops that quickly and that emphatically. Okay, I want to pivot off this series a little bit entirely because you're also our Padres guy I want to talk to about that Padres team. That team's hot. It's kind of like Team of Destiny vibes after 2023 where everything went wrong. Things are starting to click for them. Man, how good do you feel about the way the Padres are playing right now? And yeah, they've made the NL West a race and then certainly a wild card relevant team there as well.
They're playing championship level baseball right now. They're overcoming any deficit. They're overcoming any mistake, you know, whether it's a bad starting pitcher outing, some bad defense. They're finding ways to win. And ultimately, that's the mark of a championship team. And the thing people have to understand, too, is they're doing this without Yu Darvish, without Joe Musgrove, without Fernando Tatis Jr. This is a team that has not been 100%. And going back to earlier in the year, I covered them a good bit. Even when they were kind of hovering around 500, you could see there was more fight in this team compared to last year's team. Last year's team had more stars, but they were at times a kind of a dead team walking. They just, you know, they got booed off the field a few times. Their lack of effort was so clear. This year's team, it was very, very different from the start. I go back to a series against the Dodgers in April where they came back all three games. I think with them, what's been good to see is they found a way to stay afloat. I mentioned all those guys were hurt early. Manny Machado was off to a terrible start. Xander Bogaerts was hurt. Ha-Seong Kim was hurt. But other guys stepped up. Jerks and Profar, Jackson Merrill, Michael King, all these guys. Dylan Cease, of course. And now that these guys are starting to get back healthy, Xander Bogaerts is back at hitting. Manny Machado has heated back up. Everything's really starting to click for them. This is a dangerous team that absolutely can win the NL West. And come October, right now, they're playing like the best team in the National League. They're playing better than the Phillies. They're playing better than the Dodgers. The Padres are a World Series contender, especially if Joe Musgrove and Fernando Tatis come back.
It's and yeah, I mean, Blake Snell looks back as well, which is obviously helpful. You know, you got guys going no-hitter threats every here and there. The other one that's interesting there, and I we're about the time of year where every conversation is going to be about some award or another. Oh yeah, Aaron Judge, well, what do you think of this? What do you think of the MVP race? Jackson Merrill, what do you think of the Rookie of the Year race? How does that one shape up to you? Like, I think everyone has kind of just assumed Paul Skeens is going to be that guy, probably would lean that way right now, but how interesting could Jackson Merrill make this down the stretch?
I think anyone who thinks Paul Skeens has this in the bag needs to watch Jackson Merrill play. That's never been true. It's been kind of funny to me people saying that. If you actually watch the games, what Jackson Merrill's doing. Right now, Jackson Merrill would have my vote today. Jackson Merrill, you have to keep in mind, played 46 games above A-ball, had never played center field in his life. Comes up, plays center field. He's hitting 280 plus with an 800 plus OPS. He's hitting for power. He's coming up in huge spots. He's had four game tying homers in a 12-day span. And he really kept the Padres afloat early again when all those guys were hurt. Machado wasn't playing well. Tatis hurt. Bogaerts hurt. Kim not hitting. It was Jerks and Profar and Jackson Merrill. What he has done has been absolutely incredible this year, and the same can be said for Paul Skeens. But Merrill being there from opening day all the way through, playing every day, playing a premium position, hitting like he is, he's been fantastic this year. So we'll see what it looks like at the end. You know, Merrill and Skeens, also Michael Bush and Mason Wynn have been really, really good as well. I think people who are saying the NL Rookie of the Year race is, you know, one clear guy and the rest of the field, I think need to take a step back, because that's just not the reality.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. And then, I mean, the way these things always work is, you know, again, Paul Skeens, very, very good. But 92 innings versus an entire season of a guy playing a position and playing a premium position, playing it well. If you look at some, you know, if you're a voter who sorts by wins above replacement, Jackson Merrill's going to be ahead because, you know, 600 plate appearances is more valuable than 92 innings. It's just the way that works.
Yeah, I know it's funny. I'm not even a big war guy. I don't really believe in that stat. I think just looking at what has been done, how important Jackson Merrill has been, his performance, to me, he's worthy. But again, you know, if he goes into a really bad slump here these final 2 months and Paul Skenes, you know, goes crazy, then Skenes will be the winner. Or if both of them start to struggle and Michael Bush and Mason Wynn go off, it's going to be an interesting debate. There's still a lot of season left, so I think we need to see how it all shakes out. But Jackson Merrill's been just fantastic, and I think people are starting to pay attention. But truth is, he's been darn good all year long.
Yeah, and hopefully, I mean, people paying attention now better than not at all, right? I just mentioned the war because I know I have talked to some people before who just start their voter like, okay, let's sort by this and then look in a little bit. So, you know, maybe a helpful guide there. Kyle, thanks so much for taking the time out, man. Enjoy the series finale tonight.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Blake.
9:38 tonight, it's Jose Berríos gets Tyler Anderson. Make sure you're checking out Kyle's coverage of it at BlueJays.com, filling in for our pal Keegan Matheson. Kyle just doing a ton of good work on, again, on the Jays, filling in on MLB.com. Angels, Padres, Dodgers stuff for OC Register. If we weren't running light on time because of the Austin Matthews presser, I was going to ask him about Matt Kemp Day the other day. Matt Kemp was one of my favorite players when he was at his peak. So it's cool to see the Dodgers sign him to a one-day contract, kind of give him the 2023 Jose Bautista treatment. I mentioned the Austin Matthews presser. Jays Talk Plus is continuing on for the second hour. We'll be on Sportsnet Plus and Sportsnet 360. If you're listening on Fan 590, you'll have to go to the alt stream on the website to check us out for the second hour. The actual radio station now, Fan 590, is going to switch over to the Austin Matthews press conference after a break here. JD Bunkus will lead the coverage of that. I believe Daniele is going to do some stuff out of it at 12 o'clock as well. So, Fan 590 will have you covered for the Austin Matthews stuff. Jays Talk Plus will continue on Sportsnet Plus, Sportsnet 360, and the alt stream. And of course, if you don't want to turn your dial and you want to catch up on the second hour later, it's always in the Blue Jays Talk podcast feed. On the other side of this, we're going to talk to Ben Nicholson Smith. Not only was this week his birthday, he was on Blue Jays Central last night. We'll get into a little bit more of the Will Wagner stuff, Joey Loprofito stuff, Kevin Gausman's outing from last night, which we probably haven't talked about enough in this first hour here. And then, yeah, we'll as we always do with Ben Nicholson Smith, we're going to do a little transaction stuff. We're going to take a little look ahead with that 2025 roster and what's on the line this next little bit here. We'll also talk to Wayne Randazzo, voice of the Los Angeles Angels. Get to know that team a little bit ahead of the finale here and ahead of another four set with them next week, Thursday to Sunday, they're here. So, a lot of Logan Ohapi, a lot of Zach Neto, just a whole lot of Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim in this little bit. Okay, stick with us. On the other side, if you're on radio, it's JD Bunkus with the Austin Matthews presser. Otherwise, Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. If you are looking for the Austin Matthews press conference, that's over on Fan 590 or Sportsnet.ca. We got you here on the alt feed and Sportsnet 360. And we're joined now by, Ben Nicholson Smith. A busy week for our Sportsnet favorite. He's on Blue Jay Central. He's on At the Letters. It was his birthday. Ben, how we doing, man?
Doing great. It's been a while since you and I spoke. Good to be talking again, and this time on your show.
Yeah, it was last night. It was last night between Blue Jays Central hits. I watched the game. I saw your hits, but how was it? I know you don't do a ton of those, but I imagine it's pretty fun to get the chip in on Blue Jays Central once in a while.
It is fun. I think anytime, because so often what we do is we talk about the game after the game, and we talk about the game. Or we don't even talk about the game sometimes. Like, it might be just more analytical about what it means moving forward. And that's great. But I actually like talking about the games themselves. And I think that's what you know, any sort of like live element does, whether it's Blue Jay Central, whether it's color commentary on the radio, when you're really involved with the game itself, I think that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's, you know, the color commentary stuff on radio is like your every pitch decision, every location, every managerial move. Like there's nothing better as a baseball fan than picking apart managerial decisions. And that's easier to do live in the moment than, you know, at 24 hours later on a show or something like that. Last night, the story dictated for you a little bit with Will Wagner having another awesome game, 5 hits here over his first two. Man, how impressed have you been with the start for Will Wagner? What are you seeing from him?
I think it's been a great start. I mean, what I'm seeing is he's finding strikes in the zone and swinging at those. And it's not a surprise considering this is a guy who walked more than he struck out at Triple-A this year. That was one of the elements that the Blue Jays really liked about him. But we're not seeing him chase. We're not seeing him expand. We're seeing him attack hittable pitches, put really good compact swings on them, and get results. I mean, he's obviously going to slump like any hitter will, but to get off to this kind of start is just ideal for the Jays. And this is why you make those trades, right? This is why you deal a Yusei Kikuchi, because, and he got the win last night for the Astros, which is awesome, and happy to see him doing well. But you gotta trade Yusei Kikuchi. You don't need 9 more starts from him. You get a Wagner, you get a Loperfido, you get a Jake Bloss, you see what happens. And what's happening right now for the Jays is some really good stuff.
Yeah, and it's very likely that at some point in the next couple of weeks, all three of those guys play in the same game for the Blue Jays, and you get a look at them. In terms of Will Wagner, look, he was probably the third name in the trade. Jake Bloss was the headline item. Loperfido was the guy who had major league experience, and you know, there were pockets of Astros fans or Astros beat writers who thought the world of Loperfido, thought a lot was going to come. Will Wagner was kind of the third piece in that. What was your sense post-trade deadline reporting this out about the Jays' optimism about Will Wagner? And you know, obviously, the proximity of the majors helps. He turned 26 the day of the trade. But what do they see? What do they see him as kind of longer-term big picture?
Yeah, he really is a very Blue Jays player.
Yeah.
In the sense that, well, first of all, he's a son of a major leaguer. So right there, you're like, yep, Jays are going to get him, lock it in. That's going to happen. And of course they do. So, but secondly, even beyond that, it's a player who has good control of the strike zone. His tools, when it comes to the power profile, they're not exceptionally loud, right? This isn't someone who's got 118 max EV in him. But he can clearly make good contact. And if you can make good contact and make good swing decisions, you got a chance as a major league hitter, which Will Wagner clearly does. So is he going to be a bench player? Is he going to be a platoon bat who plays against righties and doesn't play against lefties? Is he going to be an everyday guy? We don't know. It's obviously a shot worth taking. But my sense of the trade was the industry loved Jake Bloss. The Jays really liked him too. That's why they wanted him. And the Jays actually really liked Loperfido too. I think that Loperfido was someone who was really, really high on their list and a big driving force behind why they accepted Houston's offer. And then when it comes to Will Wagner, he probably was the third player in that trade, but a player who, again, the Jays like and think that the bat can be you know, a valuable tool in the major leagues.
And yeah, well, it's certainly, I mean, early on, it's a 2-game sample. It's funny when you see the, you know, you immediately do the, oh, no other Jay has done this since player X, or here's the small list. And it's like, huh, there are some really good players in there. There are some not good players in there who also got off to a really good start. So I'm going to ask you something. I'm going to put you on the spot for a little game. Okay.
Go for it.
So these are the names that came up as either guys who got 3 hits in their major league debut for the Blue Jays or guys who had 5 hits over their first 2 games. So the two groups that Will Wagner has been in with so far. Will Wagner will have a better or worse major league baseball career than Danny Ainge, better or worse?
Better.
Lloyd
Mosby. Career as an NBA executive, however.
Yeah, won't have as good an NBA career. Lloyd Mosby.
Worse.
David Schneider, we'll kind of put an asterisk because they're too connected to each other, but if you want to answer that one, you can.
I'd say that's a close comp.
Yeah.
I'll say better because he's a left-handed hitter, which gives him the platoon advantage more.
There you go. J.P.R. and Sebia.
It's a tough one. Aaron Sebia, I mean, I don't have it in front of me. Aaron Sebia stuck around for a while. I mean, I don't know what his career WAR was, probably like four to five or something, like not super high, but he stuck around a while. It's not a bad major league career.
His career WAR was 0.1.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he had some real bad seasons in there with the occasional power outburst.
0.1, man. All right, well, I'll say Will Wagner does better than that.
Okay, Pat Borders.
No. Pat Borders stuck around for like 17 years,
I know. And here's maybe the most interesting one, because he gets off to a crazy start. He wins the Rookie of the Year. He never, ever again reaches that promise, but he has a super long major league career and wins a bunch of World Series. Eric Hinsky.
No, that's a good career.
It is. Eric Hinsky 11 is a WAR, career. A couple wins above replacement, or a couple World Series rings, a Rookie of the Year, obviously.
You know what? It's actually not a bad comp, right? Because it's a left-handed hitter, a guy who didn't necessarily have like a great, great position, someone who, you know, had some power. That's probably, you know, an optimistic comp. If Will Wagner becomes Eric Hinsky, I think Blue Jays fans would be very, very happy. And I'm going to say he doesn't get to that threshold.
I would be surprised. That's one of my all-time favorite Blue Jays. We knew Will Wagner's got to get the full back tattoo as well. It's a weird career path if you're going to be Eric Hinsky. Okay, so more near term then. What kind of role do you think Will Wagner is kind of auditioning for 2025 right now? Could he play his way into... You know, gets a little murky because him, Horwitz, Barger, Loperfeeder, they're all lefties. So there's like, weirdly, they need a lefty for the top part of the order, but they're oversaturated with lefties in the kind of bench role. Could he push for more than a bench role? Is he kind of, you know, making a case for, hey, I'm the 10th man next year? What do you think that looks like for him?
To me, I think that anything's on the table. Like, when we're talking about anyone on this team who's not named Bichette or Vladdy, it's all got to be on the table, I think. And so that could mean that, in my view, if he has a bad spring and if he finishes poorly, he's not on the team. You know, we tried, didn't work. Or on the high end, I think there's a scenario where he plays like 140 games next year. I mean, that's like super, super optimistic, but I think you have to be open to that. And you have to be open to seeing, hey, if this guy just continues to do what he's doing in the same way that Spencer Horwitz has just built on an incredible start at AAA and done just a great job all season in the major leagues, those guys have to have a path to regular playing time. And at this point, we would probably say that it's unlikely that either one of them can be counted on as an answer against left-handed pitching. But this is the advantage of being out of the race. If there is one, it's the silver lining, is you can see what happens. You can give them a shot. And so, yeah, I think with Wagner, maybe the likely outcome is that he's someone who mostly plays against right-handed pitching, and maybe he's an up-down guy for you next year, and that's totally fine. But I'd be open to basically anything with almost anyone on this team.
So when it comes to the – so they are going to have like a bunch of guys who are in the mix for bench spots and up-down spots, and that is – helpful. It's better to have that depth than not. You don't have to go out and, again, nice season and return to a nice prospect to Charles McAdoo, but you don't want to have to go out and spend $15 million on Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. You're supposed to be able to build that guy inexpensively. They are going to have a bunch of, again, Barger, Loperfeeder, Wagner, Horwitz, Jimenez, Ernie Clement, David Schneider, Alan Roden, Jonathan Classe. All those guys could be in the mix for, let's say, four, you know, part-time slash bench roles or whatever. Most of those guys will have options, and you need the AAA depth and things like that. When it comes, though, to the other holes this team is going to have to address this offseason, particularly the bullpen, would you pull from that pool of guys, especially once you're a little clear on who's the odd man out for you to address other holes? Or is like turning one, let's say you turn Addison Barger into like a seventh, eighth inning guy. Is that too low a value for value play for you? Like where do you come out on, hey, there might be a little extra depth on the 40-man position player side that's not startable?
Yeah, I think that's something the Jays are going to have to wrestle with this offseason and potentially make some real hard decisions there. And to me, it comes down to internally evaluating your own players properly. And so this is where they're really going to have to know their own guys. And they've actually... of all the prospects they've traded, whether it's Austin Martin, Jordan Groshans, you look back at those names, they haven't traded anyone I guess Gabriel Moreno is the one exception, but they haven't traded that many guys where you're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that they would give this player away. And they made a lot of trades. So if they can continue to make those proper evaluations internally, then that's going to go a long way toward helping their team. Because like you said, Blake, you look at this team for next year, they need so much more pitching, right? And we saw Kevin Gausman go 7 innings last night. He was able to, you know, hold it together against, you know, a team that's not very good in the LA Angels, but he held it together, full credit to him. But do you expect Bassett and Gausman and Berríos to pitch 180 innings plus the way they're all on pace to this year in 2025? I mean, it's a big ask. And so you're going to need just so much pitching depth. And I think you can probably make one free agent signing there at least, but you're not signing three guys to join the starting rotation. So to me, it would be starting pitching and bullpen, of course. I mean, they need relievers too. They're so far away, despite, you know, pretty nice outing from Ryan Burr last night, but they're so far away from having a good bullpen that they need to be open to this kind of trade. And I think that picking the right guy to trade, the right couple guys to trade is going to be important. But to me, you're trading some of that offensive depth for pitching.
And which makes sense. And we'll see who the odd guys out here. And I'll circle back to the starting rotation guys in a minute here, because I did want to dig in on something you did on Blue Jay Central, or we both kind of did on Blue Jay Central last night. But when sticking with the kind of prospecty guys, I think the reason I maybe used Addison Barger as the trade example, one, I had to pick a guy. But two, he has been back up with the Blue Jays now for 23 games since being recalled. And this is, you know, not long before the trade deadline. So there's been opportunity. In those 23 team games, he has 37 plate appearances. What have you made of Barger being kind of, I guess Stuart Baroah has probably been less of a priority, but Addison Barger being, you know, pretty close to the bottom of the priority list when it comes to finding at-bats for guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's to some extent a product of others playing really well. And when you have someone like Spencer Horowitz hitting the way he is, you're just not going to have as much playing time. Barger has lost playing time. David Schneider has lost playing time. That's just going to be the way it is. I think as a team, it's simpler if you have clear guys where it's like, he's going to play, he's going to play, he's going to play. And as fans too, sometimes that's kind of what you want. You want to arrive at certainty. And I definitely get that impulse. I think the reality is, there's so much less certainty in the course of a major league season than we might like to think there is. And really, it's a constant juggling act, even for the good teams. You look at the Dodgers, you look at the Yankees and Orioles, they're making things up on the fly. The Orioles remade their bullpen on the fly. The Dodgers have remade a lot of their team on the fly this year. So you're never going to, I don't want to say never, the Phillies maybe have a team where it's like, yep, we got Harper, Realmuto, Castellanos. Like, it's a plug and play. It's an old school team. Love that. It's fun, but it's rare too. And I think that the likelihood for the Blue Jays is they are juggling with these guys in the course of even a good season. Even if things go well for them next year, it's going to be a juggling act. And maybe that means that someone like Barger is pushed to the side.
Speaking of those Dodgers, are you doing okay with the Ahmed Rosario DFA?
You know what? It's such a testament to today's game and the way players are evaluated that a hitter with a 300 average can be DFA'd. Because I honestly don't think that 10 years ago that would have happened. This is a guy like Rosario, and I'm not just trying. I know, like, I lean into it too. Like, it's
of course we're having fun with it. It's not like you were like, this guy's going to be Aaron Judge this year. It was like, this guy for $1.5 million makes sense as a bench piece for someone.
Exactly. And he went on, he's had a good year, right? He's hitting 300, but the Dodgers felt that they had better options there. So they go and they make that trade. It's the same thing where, you know, Kikuchi up to the deadline, he wasn't actually pitching that amazing, but hey, everyone's looking past the ERA. They're looking to the underlying numbers and the stuff and the projections. And that's what gets guys paid. Like, even you look at Santander this offseason, he's probably going to hit 40 bombs this year. Doesn't mean he's going to sign $150 million deal. You know, like, teams evaluate based on projections so much more than they do based on what's actually happened on the field, which, you know, you can argue that both ways, but it's a huge shift in the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because, like, obviously it's helpful to know, like, if a guy hit 300 and he got really, really lucky, and, you know, like, we're past the point of, like, batting average on balls in play is just a luck metric. Like, that tells you a lot about a player. You got a 30% line drive rate, you're going to have, and you're fast, you're going to have a really good batting average on balls in play. You don't strike out, you're going to have a good batting average, things like that. It's helpful to know, but yeah, sometimes it does feel like, I mean, Will Wagner's a good example as a prospect, right? It's like every single level he goes up, he just hits. And it's still, he doesn't get the prospect shine because there's like this concern about him or that concern. It's like, well, the guy just keeps telling you he can hit though. So it's interesting how teams kind of weigh those things. And in the Dodgers case, like, I mean, I don't think, you know, I don't know that we'll ever hear the name Michael Flynn again, but like pitching depth at the AAA level, they traded for Ahmed Rosario, used him for five games and DFA'd him. It's pretty wild. Shifting back to the Jays side, last one on this kind of group of prospects before we talk about the pitchers. What have you seen from Joey Loprofito? I know he got off the slump last night with an RBI single in the eighth, had been an 0-for stretch. He actually had four hits over his first three games with the Jays. Is this a pressing thing? Is the, like, how big a concern is the swing and miss stuff to you, given what the profile looked like even before he came over?
Yeah, I mean, the swing and miss is part of the questions that you would have with his profile, even to begin with, even before he arrived in Toronto. You look at the AAA swing and miss, the strikeout rate was in the upper 20s. In the major league with the Astros before getting traded to the Blue Jays, it was in the 30s for a strikeout rate. So, you know, we're looking at a guy who does miss the ball a lot. And the Jays accepted that, and they still liked him and thought that they could work with him as a player. And none of that has changed big picture with how he's viewed internally. At the same time, 2 weeks of Joey Loprofito, this is like worst case scenario. This performance that we've seen from him as a Toronto Blue Jay, it's been bad. He's striking out all the time. He's even cutting in front of Dalton Varsho on defense. He hasn't really found his comfort level or his rhythm defensively to fit in with this team and to understand that Dalton Varsho is going to make every play in left center field. And so it's been a real adjustment period. Now, that's to be expected. That's part of the sort of downside that you accept as a retooling team, is that you're not going to have the polished professionalism of a Kevin Kiermaier. And you're going to accept that Loprofito is going to make more mistakes than Kevin Kiermaier, but his chance of being a, you know, let's say a two-win player in 2025 is higher than Kevin Kiermaier's chance of doing that.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I imagine the cutting off our show thing is something that will only happen once. Did you were probably at the game for that one, right?
Yes.
So did you get a look at Varsho's face when it happened?
I did. I watched him on the Sportsnet broadcast, and I watched him from the press box in left field. And my read was that Varsho stayed very composed, and very contained. And as you would expect, he was a total pro about it. And then in the dugout afterwards, John Schneider made a point to let Joey Loprofito know, hey, you got to let Dalton Varsho get that ball. And it's pretty obvious. Anyone watching that game knows that that was a mistake.
Yeah, you can't call off the uncrowned platinum glove winner. Can't run in front of him. All right, let's shift to the pitching side a little bit. Kevin Gausman last night goes 7 shutout. It's the first time since May of 2023 that he's gone 7-plus in consecutive starts. You and I were texting during the outing, though. There were some warning signs early. Maybe this is a case of the Angels being over-aggressive or just not a very good lineup. What have you made from the fact that Gausman, results-wise, has been pretty solid of late, but some of the underlying stuff, the velocity, the break on the splitter, the ability to generate swing and miss, it hasn't quite been there. Like, I could see a case where it's like, well, it's not there, so I'm pitching to contact a little bit more, and that's looked a little different. I could also see it maybe being, you know, hey, the Angels missed some, the Orioles missed some. How have you evaluated the last couple Gausman starts?
Yeah, I thought the Angels missed some opportunities against Kevin Gausman. The splitter at times was good. At times it seemed to be drifting more into the right-hand hitting batter's box. To me, with the velocity down a little bit, with the splitter being a little inconsistent, it actually wasn't his best stuff that I've seen. But hey, 7 innings, I mean, he did the job. You got to give him credit. And certainly you look at his last 6 starts, he's averaging more than 7 innings per appearance. This is a really good run for Kevin Gausman. And, you know, so I want to give him credit there. I don't want to be unfair to what he's doing, but it's a results business. And so that part has been good. But then as you project ahead, you look at the velocity being down. You look at a guy who's taken on so much workload in recent seasons. you know, this doesn't look like the ace version of Kevin Gausman that we saw in last year, that we saw in 2022. This isn't quite that best dominant version.
It's not. And it's, you know, it's an interesting challenge for any pitcher. And hey, what do you go into the offseason working on? Is it trying to get that velocity back? Is it kind of what he did this spring? Hey, I'm going to toy with a two-seamer to give me a fourth pitch. It's an interesting question. With respect to that workload, I mentioned this on the show and on Blue Jay Central last night. Berríos, Gausman, Bassett are fifth, sixth, and eighth in total innings pitched since 2021. So coming out of that pandemic shortened season where everyone had a lesser workload. You can go back to the start of 2017 and Berríos is third. Gausman is seventh, even though Gausman got moved to the bullpen at one point. Bassett wasn't really a regular in the majors until 2019, but you know he's been top 10, top 15 ever since he got to the majors. All those, Berríos is a little on the younger side, but Gausman is in the mid-30s. Bassett's in his late 30s. We know not a perfect one-to-one correlation, but the higher your workload, the larger the injury risk. We see stuff decline in season and things like that. How aware do you think the Blue Jays need to be of the workload that those guys have carried the last couple years as it pertains to, hey, we need these guys optimized for 2025 really badly? Like they're too important to take any risks now for 2025.
Yeah, exactly. I think they are really important to the Jays' chances, especially when you look at what's behind that group. And it's Yariel Rodriguez, it's Bowden Francis, it's Jake Bloss. And after that, it's really, really thin. So, you know, especially with all the injuries that they've had in their system, they do not have a lot of AAA pitching depth. They do not have a lot of AA pitching depth that you'd be really excited about or confident in. So those guys are really important. I think that it's a balancing act whenever you're talking about pitchers with this stature in the game. And you alluded to this on Blue Jays Central last night, where it's like, hey, these guys are going to want to pitch. They're pitchers. This is their profession. This is, you know, what they work to do year round, is to have those 30 chances, those 32 chances to go out and help their team. So I don't think that you necessarily have to be in a rush to take that away from them and, you know, shut down Kevin Gausman on August the 20th. There's no need to do that. But at the same time, I think that if there's a stretch, for example, like the one they have coming up after the off day tomorrow, where they're playing all these games in a row, maybe throw in an extra starter just to give everyone an extra day. If you're ever in doubt, if Gausman's at 94 pitches through five innings for whatever reason, maybe just call it a day. Maybe turn the game over at that point, and it's time for Jerry Rodriguez to do his thing. You know, like, you don't have to push it in the same way that you would if you're in a pennant race, where obviously if the Jays were contending, if the Jays were two back of a wild card right now, I'd say push these guys to the max. Like, get anything you can, anything you want out of them. That's why they're signed. But it's a different story right now. They're not contending. So you have to prepare to some extent for 2025. To me, that means you go at 80%. You don't go at 95%. You just go at 80% and see where that leads you.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. And the six-man rotation idea, like, they're not going to shut the three of these guys down for an entire month of the season with nobody to backfill. And then it comes February and they've been down for 6 months and they only threw 140 innings this year. Like, you probably still want them in the 160-ish range at a minimum so that they're built up. And these guys want to pitch too, right? Like, the numbers, their next contract, the competitor nature and things like that. Those guys want to pitch. But I think, yeah, they have 18 games in 17 days coming up because of the Red Sox doubleheader. You'll get the extra guy for the doubleheader day, but strikes me as a reasonable time to maybe drop an extra. Hey, we don't have an off day for 2.5 weeks. Let's drop in an extra, you know, hey, Jake Bloss is going to come up for one day. And that's it. Or Paolo Espino is going to come up and eat some innings or whatever. And then September's easier. They have 5 off days in the 29 game days of September, and you get an extra roster spot. Like, way easier to manage in September. This is us saying they probably should do that. Have you gotten a sense at all of if they'll consider that over these next couple of weeks?
I think, as you know, pitching is very much, they plan it out really well and really carefully, but almost like week to week. Like, I don't think that they're at the point where they're planning out like August 24th right now, but I would say within the next few days, I would expect that the Jays sit down with Pete Walker, John Schneider, Ross Atkins, and kind of map out what are they going to do. And they'll have the same conversation that we are. And I would think that the answer is, yeah, find a way to get Paolo Espino up for a day, right? Like, even regardless of whether you're getting Jake Bloss in, which with Bloss, again, he's so important to the future of this team. You don't want to rush it. You don't want to, you know, really push the comfort level with him. So if he's ready, great. Boom, he's in. If he's not, you can put Paolo Espino in. You can do a bullpen game, because the last thing you want to do is, hey, it's, you know, 4 days rest and, you know, yeah, Kev, can you go? Yeah, I'm good to go. But, you know, he pulls a calf. Like, you just don't want to deal with that. You just want them to finish the season strong and not go over the top with the pushing of these veteran pitchers.
Yeah, and even though, you know, one of the counters to a six-man rotation or calling an extra guy up is always, you know, oh, well, it thins out the bullpen. You can only have so many pitchers. I mean, they're going to do the churn with these guys. They've got seven pitchers at AAA right now who are on the 40-man, and if we include Hagen Danner, who's made some rehab appearances now, seven guys who are healthy and could come up. And, you know, you could – it's not – how and why you want to do these things, but like, you could send Tommy Nance down after he pitches two innings and get a Jose Quas back up, or a Paolo Espino or something like that. So you've got some options there with this. On the more positive side of the pitching front, I know you were off on Monday, but I know that you are you, so even on your off day, you were probably locked in. Bowden Francis had the best start we've seen from him, and we kind of could have said that the last three starts in a row. Getting through the Baltimore order in two different starts. So they saw him twice in a row, and they weren't like, you know, they weren't even quality starts. I think it was 3-5 2/3 and 2-5 1/3 or something like that. I might be misremembering exactly what it was. And then he obviously Monday has the best start of his career. No questions asked. He even introduces a two seamer. What have you seen from Bowden Francis the last couple games here? Are we talking about him more as in the mix for that SP5 role last year versus, hey, long man out of the bullpen? Like, does he have a chance to at least put his name in that conversation the next couple weeks here?
Yeah, I think his name is in that conversation and will stay there probably until, you know, March 25th, 2025, when a decision has to be made. Yeah, he's been really good the last few outings, and certainly against the Angels, that's exactly what you want to see. I thought, like, as you know, I certainly thought coming out of spring training that he was going to be pretty good. I thought he could be a number five starter in the major leagues based on what I saw in spring training. Then early in the season, it did, right from that first start in Houston all the way through the first few months of the season, it did not go well. He did not look like a major league starting pitcher. He was struggling. So that was a disappointment, but to see him recover, I mean, this is exactly what the Blue Jays would have wanted from Bowden Francis, is to just keep going, keep pushing, and then find some good results, as we're seeing here against the Angels. So as for next season, I still think if you're the Jays, you need to go out and add a real major league starting pitcher to essentially backfill for Yusei Kikuchi. And then that allows you to have Gausman, Bassett, Berríos, Yariel, new starting pitcher. In that scenario, you have Bloss and Bowden Francis as your 6-7 at AAA. That's a pretty reasonable-ish place to go. I think ideally you want another optionable starting pitcher. Trey Yosavage is not that far away, but you're certainly not counting on him in the first half, and probably even the second half of next season. So could it be trade? Otherwise, you know, I don't know exactly where you're getting someone with options. So it probably would have to be a trade.
Yeah, I mean, an optionable starting pitcher who could be a fifth starting pitcher is like probably the hardest thing to... It's why Jake Bloss was such a big trade chip, right? Yeah. Even though he's not a top 100 prospect. Hey, a guy who's shown he can get major league hitters out and has a couple years of options. And yeah, I think that's a good read on it. You know, I don't ask the Bowden Francis... Small part of me asks the Bowden Francis question when he's pitching well, because like, I was really high on him and I like... was almost off Bowden Francis Island, and I was like, no, I'm gonna cling on. Let's see. But no, I don't think, like, even if he's awesome the rest of the way, like, best case scenario is, hey, he enters next year in the mix for a back end spot. You're not giving him a spot just yet.
No shot.
Yeah, and by the way, just for anyone who hasn't seen it, so 3.03 ERA over his last 40 innings, kind of since he got called back up, and then had that one outing where they put him in just that terrible spot in an opener day and guys on base and things like that. Just a mess of a spot. Okay, I got one more fun one for you before I let you go here. I hope it's fun anyway.
Great.
So we're getting close to September call-ups. It's not like it used to be. You used to be able to call up Ben, like me, you, and Arden would be on the roster the way it used to go. Now you get two spots. It's usually one hitter and one pitcher. So we don't get to see as many guys make their debut in like a meaningless, here's a pinch run, here's a pinch hit, here's one start situation. Like you go back to like 2005, 2006, you would get a bunch of those guys. So I went back and I looked at Blue Jays who have made their major league debut as September call-ups the last few years. Do you remember, and this is only on the position player side, by the way, the pitchers, there was too much relief pitcher churn to really figure out. So only position player side. The most recent one should be fairly front of mind still. Do you remember who the most recent one was?
Horowitz?
No, just got traded. Or sold.
Cam Eden.
Cam Eden was the most recent. After that, you have to go back to 2018. For the last time a Jay made his major league debut as a September call-up. There were four that year, though, so maybe you'll be able to get one.
18. Alford?
No.
Jonathan Davis?
That's one of them, yep.
Richard Urania?
2017, but he's on my list here as well.
Okay. What position?
One is a catcher.
In 18, a catcher debuts
as a September call-up. He stuck around for a little bit.
Obviously not that good.
Danny Jansen has taken his job multiple times.
Oh, Reese McGuire?
Yes.
Okay.
So there's two more. One, just big, lovable dude, eventually got traded.
Rowdy Tellez.
Yes. And then the last one is currently on the Yankees IL.
Billy McKinney.
No. Infielder with some speed.
Oh, John Birdie.
Yes. Nice. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good list.
Nice.
Yeah.
That was a really good list.
Yeah.
Who do you think's next?
Dalton Pompey in 2014 was the next one after Dickie Baseball. Then you get into some like Kyle Phillips 2009, Adam Lind 2006, and a name I had completely forgotten about until I did it. John Ford Griffin in 2005, if you remember the John Ford Griffin era.
I do remember the John Ford Griffin era. I do not remember the name Kyle Phillips at all.
Yeah, that's he did not last in the majors very long. He was a catcher. He kind of looked like Kevin Barker based on his player picture. Don't tell Kevin Barker I said that. Kevin Barker is a more handsome man. Yeah, he came up and he had like a couple quick cups of coffee. So sadly, maybe we'll get a debut. I guess even then, Jonathan Clase has already made his major league debut. Luis De Los Santos has already made his major league debut. I don't know that we're going to get one this year.
Maybe a Blue Jays debut. Maybe Joey Votto makes his Blue Jays debut. It's only 2 weeks away. Rosters expand. Use it on Votto. I think it's time, if not before.
Yeah.
Do you think we see Votto this year? I'm sure you get asked this all the time because I do as well.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you. The thing that I get asked most because I'm the, as you and JD Bunkus have covered at length, I'm the nerd. So what I get asked is, do they have enough room under the CBT line for Votto's, the prorated amount of Votto's contract? To which my answer is like, they didn't get below the CBT line to do a small move to get back over it. They're not going to do it unless they're, we don't know.
Right.
We don't know the exact number, but you don't get below it and then go back over it for a September call-up.
I agree. I don't think Votto will jeopardize that. No one's told me this in these terms, but I don't think that they're going to have to choose between Votto and CBT.
No.
I think that they'll be under the CBT, and I think that they'll be able to get Votto on if they want.
Yeah. Once you prorate it for like 1/6 of a season and the difference between him and a minimum, you're talking about like $200,000.
Yeah, exactly. So at that point, I don't think that they're going to be quite that close to it. We'll see. And as for JD Bunkus and I calling you a nerd, hey, that is, it takes one to know one, first of all. And second of all, it's Major League Baseball. They're nerds everywhere. They're nerds on coaching staffs. The GMs are all nerds.
There are nerds on the rosters, to be clear.
I was going to say, The players, a lot of the players are. So, you know, this is Major League Baseball in 2024.
Actually, so this is not nerd related, but I was going to say, you know, some of the there was interesting prospect interviews in the draft process of like pitchers talking and using that kind of language, you know, the pitch design and the analytics language and stuff like that. This guy did not talk about this the way I heard, but you wrote about this for sportsnet.ca. We met Treya Savage last week at the ballpark. What did you make of the first impression there?
You know, it's a very brief first impression. You're just really seeing someone who's getting used to the major league environment for the first time. It's a chance for Jay's people to get a sense of what he's like and who he is. He's someone who kept his answers pretty short, to the point, direct, you know, a very, polite and seemed focused on just getting work done. Doesn't seem like he's overly analytical. It seems like he's open to that. And if someone wants to come to him with analytics, then he'll listen to it. But I don't think he's, you know, refreshing Fangraphs to see what the next article is.
Yeah, maybe maybe not. I hope he's refreshing sportsnet.ca. Look, if he's going to be he's going to be a long-term Blue Jay, he's going to have to get used to saying in a commercial, Ben Nicholson Smith, I read that guy every day, or whatever the lines are. Ben, thanks for taking the time out, man.
Yeah, anytime, Blake.
Ben Nicholson Smith of Sportsnet, of At the Letters, on Blue Jay Central for you again tonight. I'm sure there'll be a lot of great stuff. And if you didn't already, wish him a happy birthday, because Monday was his birthday. We are going to take a break. Speaking of Joey Votto, Amir Garrett got released by the Angels. I say that because when Joey Votto told me a couple years ago for a Raptors piece when I was at The Athletic that he can still dunk, and I may or may not have seen proof, Amir Garrett is the guy who on the Reds at that time was also a good player and vouched for Votto's quality as a basketball player. We're going to take a break. We're going to talk a little Angels, set this series finale up with Wayne Randazzo on the other side as Jays Talk Plus continues on Sportsnet 360.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jays wrap up this series with the Angels tonight. 9:38 start, Jose Berríos against Tyler Anderson. But they're going to do it again next week here in Toronto. So let's get to know this Angels team a little bit better with one of the voices of the Angels on play-by-play. Also, a familiar voice from Apple TV Plus games. It's Wayne Randazzo. Wayne, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am. I'm doing pretty well. This series has not gone the best for the Angels so far, but heading into this, it seemed like they've been playing some pretty good baseball over the last month or two. What had gone into that? What have you seen from the Angels the last little while through, you know, some minor deadline turmoil and things like that? A team that seemed to, you know, be playing a little bit of better baseball.
Well, it's a young team, and I think that they've really tried to, you know, develop their young players at the major league level this year, and I think largely they have. I think they've seen a lot of improvements from guys like Zach Neto, who's had a really great year, and Logan Ohapi, who's had a good year, although he's been in a bad slump here lately. Joe Adell and Mickey Moniak, you know, these young players have risen to the occasion. They have not gotten much contribution from their veteran players this year, and I think that's held them back some, and their, you know, starting pitching has not taken the same steps forward that the position players have. So it's been a season where they certainly have not been able to win as much as they'd like, but they've been better. I mean, they were 17 games under 500 after the first 2 months. And then, you know, since then they've played about 500 ball. So they've shown some improvements, and, you know, unfortunately for them, they have not done well against the Blue Jays.
We're okay with that because the Blue Jays hadn't been playing a super fun baseball of late either. So we're okay with this here. When it comes to some of those young players you mentioned, Zach Neto has been great. Logan Ohapi, I know he's in a bit of a cold streak now, but a good season. Nolan Schanuel, a good season. When it comes to Joe Adell, obviously the tools are so obvious. He had a great catch in the series opener, hits the ball extremely hard. I know the numbers are a little bit better over the last month or so. Are you seeing the growth that you need to see from Joe Adell? Like, how close do you think he is to, you know, putting all those tools together, maybe?
I think he's getting there. I don't know that he's going to be a guy that's going to be in the MVP conversation, although he certainly has the skills to do it. But he's growing, and I think he's leading the majors in defensive runs saved by right fielders, which I think if you told someone that 2 or 3 years ago, they would have looked at you like you had two or three heads. But he's done it. He's put the work in to become a really good outfielder. And offensively, you know, over the last month, he got rid of his leg kick. He started to make more contact. The power is obvious. He has great speed. So he's putting things together. And I think once he becomes a little bit more consistent with getting base hits and taking those singles and doubles that, you know, he'll start to have a lot of success at the plate. And, you know, we've seen more of it over the last month. So I think he's another guy who's improved a lot, and he works hard, and he's a great guy. And I think that if he continues on that path, he should still be a pretty good major league player.
So, you know, they have a handful of young guys starting to, you know, figure some things out or performing at the top of the lineup. That could maybe lead to, you know, some optimism about what things look like next year. When it comes to figuring out what this team looks like in the medium term, though, here, 2025, 2026, Wayne, how much does the status of Mike Trout and his ability to get back to health this offseason, like, how much does that hang over our ability to figure out what the Angels might do and what they might be able to be?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, you know, ultimately there's still two more years left on Anthony Rendon's contract, and between he and Trout, they're breaking in about $80 million a year, the two of them. So it's a big part of their payroll, and I don't know how much Artie Moreno is going to add to that payroll going into next season. So we'll see. I mean, they certainly need some starting pitching. If Trout's going to be more of a DH than an outfielder moving forward, then they need another outfielder. So we'll see how they allocate whatever money they do spend in the off season. But Trout hopefully will be able to switch to being a DH maybe most of the time, and that will allow him to stay on the field more. I think that he's open to that in a way that he hasn't been before. Whether that's moving to a corner outfield position and coming off center field or just strictly DHing, I think those things are on the table now for Mike, just because he's so valuable to their lineup, and they need him in there. I mean, if he can just bat every day or most days, you know, the Angels would love to have that. And if that's sacrificing his time in the outfield, I don't think at this point that they mind. And I think that he's starting to come around to that as well.
Yeah, I mean, anything to keep that bat in there. And even with the knee injury, you know, he was hitting very well when we last saw him. Wayne, a little more near term, we're going to see Tyler Anderson tonight against this Jays team. Man, he has had a real good year, especially compared to 2023. And obviously, you go back to 2022, he had that very strong year with the Dodgers. What are we looking for with Anderson? How much of the success that he is going to have or isn't going to have flows from that nasty changeup?
Yeah, he's a changeup guy, and, you know, I think there was a lot of talk about him at the trade deadline, and, you know, Kikuchi was the one who ended up getting traded to the Astros, and Houston gave up a pretty decent haul to get Kikuchi from the Blue Jays, and then, you know, Anderson ended up staying put. A lot of people were wondering why, and, you know, I think ultimately Kikuchi was more attractive, even though his numbers weren't as good, because he throws a lot harder. And I think teams are still, you know, when they're thinking about a pitcher for the playoffs, they want velocity and they don't want a guy who necessarily throws a lot of changeups. But Anderson's really been successful two of the last 3 years with his changeup, and he knows how to get guys out. He knows how to pitch. I mean, he really does. He has a good approach up there. It's not luck. You know, if you look at soft contact and getting guys to pop it up or not hit the ball very hard, a lot of analytics will post it as, you know, he's been lucky, you know, the BABIP is low or whatever. But it's not luck. Anderson is doing this on purpose, and he has done it to a pretty high level, like I said, two of the last 3 years. So I think that Tyler Anderson goes out there knowing what he wants to do to opposing hitters. He's a tough guy to square up. And, you know, he's been really successful this year locating his fastball, which helps his changeup play up. And, you know, he's been outstanding. There have been very few blips for him this season. And I would expect that he'll have another good performance tonight.
Yeah, you mentioned the, you know, the hey, he's tough to square up. Nobody allows more pulled balls in baseball, and they just aren't hard when he allows them. It's a lot of guys, you know, rolling over it or being out ahead of it. Wayne, before I let you go here, I know you have the Apple TV Plus Jays Cubs on Friday as well. You get a look at the Jays here. You'll get a look at the Jays Friday. You'll get a look at the Jays again next weekend. What are your impressions of where the Blue Jays are at here and some of the new young pieces?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see them in this mode. I really am curious what their plan is beyond this year. I mean, you have Guerrero and Bichette really for one more year under team control. But you don't have a lot of pieces around them anymore. I mean, you still have some good pitching with Gausman and Barrios and Bassett. But you don't have a whole lot in that lineup right now. It's a lot of younger players. You know, Springer's not had a very good year. And then you're seeing what else is there. I mean, obviously, Will Wagner has shown up and done pretty well these first two games in his major league career. But I don't know where they go from here. And I think that's something that they're going to have to figure out. What does it look like, not only in 2025, but beyond that? Are they keeping Guerrero and Bichette long term? Are they going to build around those guys? Are they going to move those guys and try to rebuild this thing? It's tough because it really hasn't worked out the way that they wanted with these two and building around them, because the Blue Jays haven't won a playoff game with these guys. So obviously they're great players, and Guerrero's had a tremendous year. So I'm curious as to how things look in the future. Obviously it's good to get a look at some young players right now, but they have some real decisions to make about what they want this to look like and how they're going to try to build a winner there.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting offseason, to say the least. We'll see if we can get an evaluation on some of these new young guys, but none of those guys are changing, you know, the big picture questions that you outlined there for us, Wayne. Going to be interesting. Tonight should be interesting as well. Friday should be interesting down at Wrigley. Thanks for taking the time out this morning. Looking forward to you on the calls.
All right. Thank you very much.
Wayne Randazzo, Angels play-by-play voice, and he'll be on the Apple TV Plus broadcast on Friday with Dontrell Willis and Heidi Watney. So that should be fun. I don't think the D train has had any of the Jays Apple TV Plus games yet. So that'll be we're usually Ryan Spielberg's team for whatever reason, the way that rotation has shook out. So yeah, the Jays will be off Thursday. Friday, the game won't be on Sportsnet. It will be on the Sportsnet Radio Network. And a reminder, you can always toggle your in your Apple TV Plus, you can toggle the audio to listen to, I think it'll be Ben Shulman and Chris LaRue for that one. I should double check. Okay, Tyler Anderson against Jose Berríos tonight. Wayne gave us a little bit on Tyler Anderson there. 34-year-old journeyman, you know, Colorado, San Fran, Pittsburgh, Seattle. Unbelievable 2022 with the Dodgers. Cashes in on that 3-year, $39 million deal with the Angels. It looks bad last year. He had a really rough season. And then this year, he's sporting a 2.99 ERA. And Wayne mentioned it. Some of the underlying numbers, the expected ERA and things like that, are not fond of Tyler Anderson, or at least think he's more average than good. But you dig in a little bit, and yeah, he's among the league leaders in limiting hard hit balls, in limiting exit velocity. I mentioned it earlier. Nobody allows more pulled balls. And you might think, oh, you know, guys are trying to pull the ball in the air. That's something a lot of power hitters are trying to do. That could be a bad thing, especially since he gives up a decent amount of fly balls. And because of that changeup, because of his ability to mix in a bunch of different pitches, yeah, guys don't square him up all that often. We'll see how it goes. Anytime you walk a moderate around a amount of guys and don't strike out a ton of guys, you're always a little prone to getting in some trouble there. But the changeup's super good. If you're a right-handed hitter, that's going to be the pitch you see most. He goes changeup, 89-mile-an-hour fastball, and cutter to righties. Lefties, he just throws the three different fastball types, cutter, fastball, sinker. Yeah, the changeup actually grades out as the number one changeup or splitter in all of baseball so far this year by run value, and the number nine overall pitch. So pretty good. The Jays have seen him a little bit, 333 average and 485 slug off of him. But again, if that sample, the parts of that sample that's from last year, he was a much less effective pitcher. Varsho 5-for-9 against him. Springer 2-for-9 with a homer. Vlad 3-for-6 against him. On the other side, Jose Berríos comes in supporting a 3.97 ERA. Similarly, shakier underlying numbers, one of the highest gaps in the league between ERA and expected ERA. But with Berríos, you always have to acknowledge that's been the case like most of his career. There's obviously a little bit of an ability to outpitch those underlying metrics. Having said that, he is second in baseball with 26 home runs allowed. This is not an Angels team that is particularly powerful. They're 24th in home runs as a team. It's not a super hitter friendly ballpark. So maybe it's a good landing spot for Jose Berríos. They've seen him a decent amount in the past, 35 plate appearances, 258 average, but very little in the way of extra base hits. Anthony Rendon struggled. Matt Tice has struggled. So we'll see how this one goes. It's 9:38. Jose Berríos against Tyler Anderson. Buck, Caleb, and Hazel on the call for you. Jamie and BNS in J Central. Eric and Chris on the radio side. And Shai's on the ground there. We will be back to talk to you at 10 a.m. tomorrow. Break it all down and set up that Cubs series. Have a wonderful Wednesday.